there, and welcome to the One Church podcast. This message was recorded live at one of our services. If you'd like to know more about life at One Church, visit us online at weareone.church or check us out on social media.
And so for the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about two things that all apply to all Christians everywhere, not some, somewhere. So I'm going to speak today, and Esther's going to speak next week, and she's going to correct everything I say today. So Esther's going to do that. No, we're going to talk about two foundational scriptures, two foundational texts in the Bible that speak to all of us, okay? And so if you like, the call here isn't specific to you, it's for all Christians. Okay, so this is, we're all called to do this. Two scriptures, one this week, one next week, we're all called to do this, okay? And they go beyond the lines of kind of denomination, whatever church you've come from, whatever denomination or network you've come from, they apply to all churches, okay? All Christians everywhere. They apply to every nation on earth. They apply. They apply to every generation since Christ and until Christ returns. We are all, as Christians, called to embody these two foundational scriptures that you're going to hear in a moment. You're thinking, what are they? We'll get there. These two scriptures are really act like launch pads to the call, okay? They act like the foundation that you kind of launch from. And if you lose these two foundational ideas, the probability is that your calling will make no difference at all. You will have your what, but you will have lost your why. These two scriptures are the Great Command and the Great Commission. The Great Command, say command.
Command.
And the Great Commission, say commission.
Commission.
Esther's going to speak about the Great Commission a little bit more next week. Today I'm going to speak about the Great Command. And listen, that word command is really significant. This is not the great option. It's the great imperative. It's the great command, okay? There's a sense in which if God commands something, that's a big deal. That's a big deal, okay? So we're going to read this, Matthew 22. This is where the great command is found in the Bible, in Matthew chapter 22, verse 34 to 40. We're going to read it together, and then I'm going to speak about it for a moment. The whiteboard's going to just block that a little bit, isn't it? There we go. Okay, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. And one of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Which is the greatest commandment? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all of your heart. Say heart.
Heart.
With all of your soul, say soul.
Soul.
And with all of your mind, say mind. Come on. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Next verse. Oh, that's it. Okay. All the law hangs on these two commandments. So the great command is this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. Okay, big deal. So you might ask the question, like I did when I first read this verse. How can you command love? Like Danny is my wife. I don't make a habit of saying, I command you to love me. Right? It does not go down well. It does not go down well if I command my... And how can you command a feeling like love? I command you to feel like you love me. You know? It's probably not going to work. How can you command someone to love? Isn't love a choice? And how can you command it of somebody? So I wanted to take a moment to just touch on that for a moment, because I think that's a really important point, and I think it's something we need to reflect on, because God is not just saying, please love me. He's saying, love me. And there's a difference, isn't there? He's saying, love me. Wow. That's kind of, How can you command love? Okay, I'm going to suggest there's three or four things that can help us to make sense of this idea of commanding love. Three or four things. And the first one I need a little help with. So is anybody in the room left-handed? Left-handed. Right. For the next few minutes, imagine you're right-handed. Is there anybody in the room right-handed? Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Sam, you're right-handed. Can you help me with this? Come on out for a moment. It's very simple. A very simple little activity I need you to help me with. Is that okay? So you're definitely right-handed. Okay, come to the whiteboard. Come over to the whiteboard. What I'd like you to do is to take the pen there, and just with your right hand, I'd like you to write heart, mind, and soul. So with your right hand, just write heart, mind, and soul, big enough for everybody to see, nice and easy. Fantastic. Ooh, capitals as well. Okay, how did you find that?
Okay.
Yeah, pretty used to doing that.
Yeah, quite comfortable.
Okay, do the same thing again. Do the same thing again, left-handed. Okay? I want you to write for everybody with your left hand. Go for it. Okay, slightly slower already. Slightly slower. I tell you what, though, that's pretty. She's doing it. So tell us about that experience. Your arm's shaking.
Oh, it's just you got to try and just let it flow rather than I don't know.
Did you have to put a little bit more thought into it?
Yeah.
You have to really kind of apply yourself to.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A round of applause, ladies and gentlemen, for Sam. You can take your seat. There's a reason you found that hard. You managed to do it, but there was a reason you were slower. Your hand was shaking, and you were concentrating hard, because it isn't natural to you to do that. It's just not, it's not natural. With your right hand, you could probably have done it blindfolded, and it would not have looked much different with your right hand. Why? Because that's natural to you. You use your right hand all the time. It's easy for you. As soon as you use your left hand, you're having to put effort into it because it doesn't come naturally to you. So I do that to try and describe one of these idea of God commanding us to love him. I think one of the reasons God has commanded us to love him is firstly because it does not come naturally to us to love him, to love God. It doesn't come naturally. It comes really naturally and really easily to me and probably to most of us to love ourselves, to put ourselves first in everything. To think about ourselves, to bless ourselves, to treat ourselves, to be kind to ourselves. It comes easy to me to be a selfish person. The reason for that, the Bible tells us, is because in my core nature, I am fallen, I am sinful. In my nature, I have this kind of tendency to go away from God rather than towards God. I tend to be selfish rather than selfless. I tend to go to my own ends rather than God's will and purpose for my life. Naturally, most naturally, I would veer off. Okay? I would, with my right hand, I would. And so when God commands us to love him, there's a sense in which he's saying, I want you to use your left hand. And I want you to, what I want you to do is to make loving me the natural direction of your life. Now, one day in heaven, loving God will be right-handed. One day in heaven, I won't have to even think about putting God first. In my life, I won't have to think about putting him first in my day. I won't have to put energy into that. It will be a natural overflow of who I am in my whole and perfect nature. Will reflect God and will love God. And God won't have to command me. God won't have to say, love the Lord your God. But in a fallen world and with a fallen nature, God may have to say, love me. Remember. Does that make sense? It's like God's having to say, remember, I know it's your left hand. I know it's not coming naturally to you, but I need to command you, because without a command and without a guide and without God saying it, the chances are I won't wind upwards, I will wind downwards. I won't get closer to God, I'll get further away. And so I think one of the reasons there's this command is because God needs to. Not because he needs to for him, but he needs to for us. To go, oh yeah, I need to think about that. Because most human beings do not approach God that way. That's number one. I think another reason that God says, God commands us to love him is because love isn't just to be understood as a feeling. It's not just to be understood as a feeling. There are a number of meanings for the word love in Hebrew and in Greek. But in English, we just have the one word. And typically, because of our society and our culture, we associate the word love with an emotion. That's how we are in Western society. Love is a feeling, or love is a sexual desire, or love is a feeling that we have towards somebody that can grow. But in Greek and Hebrew, there are also other aspects of love, other words that describe love. One of them is called agape. Agape love, A-G-A-P-E. And agape love describes the kind of love that is an act of the will, a choice that we make. That is has nothing to do with whether it's returned or not, or doesn't have anything to do with even if the person that we love has any worth or value to be loved. But we choose to love anyway. We make an act of the will, and that's agape love. It's in Greek and in that kind of culture, it's the highest kind of love, higher even than feelings. Why? Because with agape love, it doesn't follow the ups and downs of our human emotions. It's consistent. It's a choice, and it's an act of the will. And I think when God says, love me, and our minds go to feelings, that's where the discrepancy is, if that makes sense. Because, I won't feel it every day. But God's not necessarily speaking about the feelings kind of love. I think he's speaking about choose, with an act of your will, to put me first, to love me daily. And that's the kind of love that this passage is speaking about. That makes sense? Number three, I think God commands us to love him because it's for our good. Because it's good for us when we do. It's not because God's lonely in heaven and he's out there going, oh, I just want to be loved. Will somebody love me? You know, that's not God. God is not deficient in love. God is love. God is not deficient in community. God is not lonely going, I just want you to love me because I'm on my own. Okay, that's not what's, that's going to sound great on the podcast. That's not why God commands us to love. Here's why God commands us to love, because when we love God as an act of our will, we keep all the other commands. You know, Jesus said in that passage, all the other commandments hang off of loving the Lord your God and loving your neighbor. You won't murder if you love your neighbor. You won't steal. You won't commit adultery. He's saying this. All those other laws are like subject to these two laws. If you love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself, it will go well for you in life. You will be happy, fulfilled. You won't face the consequences and the very painful consequences of living outside of those commands, of sinning, and all that goes with that. You won't suffer broken relationships, broken marriages. You won't suffer with prison sentences. You won't suffer with the result of the loneliness and isolation that comes from being selfish and living selfishly. If you love God and love your neighbor, it will go well for you in life. You will find joy, and you will find peace, and you will find truth in living out those commands. So if you love God and you love your neighbor, the chances are, although we're not perfect, but the chances are if those things are in our lives, it's going to feed into the behavior in your life. It's going to feed into your choices. It's going to feed into your marriage, your relationships. It's going to feed into every part of your life. And it's more likely those things are then to be joyful and at peace Because wherever sin is, there is death. It breaks, it damages, it destroys, it steals, it robs. It does not bring life. So I think God's saying, love me. Because if you do, because if you get this, it's gonna go well for you. It's going to go well for you. There's a verse that I love in Deuteronomy that I think really displays God's heart for us along these lines. It's found in Deuteronomy chapter 30. I'm just going to read it now on the screen. Let's move you back. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Is it there, Si? There we go. This day I call on the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life. Choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to his voice. Hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's like God is saying, I put before you two options. You can love me, and all will go well. You can love me and love my commands and work at the left-hand thing. Right? Or you can go your own way, but curses are down that road. Slavery is down that road. Fear is down that road. Consequences are down that road. I put before you the choice between life and death. And if you'll love me, it will go well for you. And so I think there's something in God's commanding us to love him that is actually because God knows that will be good for us. And he's a good God. Does that make sense? There's three things. Last one. If I were to write on this board all the numbers up to 10, I'm going to miss one, aren't I? I shouldn't have started this. What have I missed? Okay. And then if I said to one of you, and I'm not going to do it, but if I said to one of you, I want you to come out and put those numbers in order, what would you do? You would come up and you starting over here, you would put the number 1. And I want to submit to you this. That loving God and putting God first is no different to putting those numbers in the right order. That's just the way it is, right? That's the way it works. That's the way it is. It's natural for us to put number 1 first, and then number 2, and then number 3. And by God saying, love me, he's only saying, look, that's the way it's meant. That's the way it is. It's the way it's meant to be. I'm number 1. I'm number 1. Number 1, number 2. Number 3, God's not asking us to do something that isn't naturally law in the universe, just in the way that maths has a natural law. He's just saying, put number 1 where number 1 needs to be. And hey, that's me. Does that make sense? So there's 4 reasons why I think God's command to love him. 4 reasons. I think we need it. Because our nature is not to love God. Number 2. What was number 2? It's not just a feeling. It's an act of the will. It's a choice. Number 3. It's for our good. It's actually for our good. If we love God, it's for our good. It will go well with us. And number 4. It's the natural law. It's the natural order of things. God is number 1. And it's no different to putting number 1 in a list of 1 to 10 first. Okay. Those are a few thoughts I had on that issue. What kind of love is God after from me? Heart, soul, and mind love. Just need a little bit of help here. So, Matt, can you come and help me? And take that one. Come and stand on the stage. Hold on to heart. Laura, can you come and hold on to soul? Brilliant. And Liam, come and hold on to mind. Fantastic. The kind of love God asks of us, commands of us, is to love him with all of our heart, to love him with all of our soul, and to love him with all of our mind. So what does that mean? Let's just take a moment to just reflect on that. heart. What does it look like to love God with all of your heart? The heart is the seat of our affections. It's the seat of our affections and our priorities. The things of our the heart speaks about what is most important and lovable to us. Okay? Loving God with all your heart. Just turn mind over and soul over a moment so that we can't see them. What would it look like to just love God with your heart, but not your soul and not your mind? Illustration. Tyson Fury. I'm a bit of a boxing fan. And Danny and I just finished actually watching, like, there's a documentary following the life of Tyson Fury and his family, isn't there? And I can't recommend it because as a good Christian, it's expletive written. And and as you can imagine, you know, the guy is a very worldly guy, okay? He's a very worldly guy. That's what I will say. I'm not judging him, all right? He's a guy by his life, all right? Just is like everybody else. And yet, at the end of his boxing matches, every time you see, if you ever watch him fight, at the end of the fight, the first thing he will say when they give him the microphone, and he's inevitably won the fight, is he will say, I just want to give glory to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Okay? That's how he begins. For helping me to smash that guy and beat that guy, and blah, 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 and on it goes. Okay. There we go. It's quite funny. Here's a guy who gives lip service to Jesus as king, but whose soul and mind are not yet Jesus's. Does that make sense? He understands Jesus should be number one. He gives him lip service. He's the first thing that he will speak about after winning a fight. We're yet to see Tyson lose a fight and then see what he says. But that's kind of what it looks like to love God with your heart and not your mind and soul. You give him lip service. I was with when I was in Bolton this weekend, on Friday, I was sat outside a pub, and I was waiting for like the team to arrive, and we were going to have a meeting in this pub, with orange juice, I promise. And then there was a lady sat on a table opposite me outside of this pub, and I sat down, and she's there, and we're the only ones outside the pub, and she puts out on the table two boxes. One was a box of tarot cards and one was a box of crystals. Tarot cards, crystals. And I started up a conversation with her, as you do. I said, oh, that's interesting. She said, I got a great bargain. You know, I got that box of tarot cards and I got that box of crystals for £16. It was a bargain. It was supposed to be a lot more. And inside I'm going, oh, God, what do I say to this? And I said, she said, I'm really open to like spiritual stuff. I said, me too. I'm open to spiritual. I said, but really, I express that through my faith in Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian. And she's, oh wow, that's brilliant. Oh yeah, love Jesus. You know, and my tarot cards and my crystals. Okay, that was an example of a person who vaguely understands Jesus. They understand he should be first. And they understand he's important, but they've not yet come to a place where they've given them their soul and their mind. Does that make sense? So it's possible for a person to kind of have an almost a heart acknowledgement about who Jesus is and yet not really follow through. Turn that one over. Let's turn over our soul. What does it look like to love Jesus with our soul, but not our heart and our mind? Well, the soul is really like the base or the seat of our emotions and our will, our feelings. It's kind of our core self. I want to suggest to you that your soul is your personality, your feelings, and your will. Your personality, your feelings, and your will. And it's possible for somebody to love Jesus with their soul, but not heart and mind. But what tends to happen is this: they will love Jesus one day and not the next. Why? Because our will is disordered, our emotions are up and down, and our personality is usually not consistent through life. And so what happens is you're a moody Christian, right? I love Jesus, he's brilliant. Where is he? He's rubbish. I love Jesus, he's brilliant. Where is he? But what happens is he's not really first. We come to Jesus when we really need him in a crisis moment in life, but we haven't really given our heart and our mind to him. Turn that one over. What does it look like to love Jesus with our mind, but not our heart and soul? You have an intellectual relationship with Jesus. I don't know about you, but I watch quite a lot of a guy on YouTube just because I find him fascinating. He's a guy called Jordan Peterson. He's a clinical psychologist. He has definitely been going on a journey in his academic pursuits that has led him to a place where he really does have an intellectual appreciation for the Bible. So he talks about the Bible a lot. He talks about Jesus a lot. However, it is not yet clear, and I am not certain that, he has actually made Jesus his Lord and Savior. This is not a guy who's going to church every week. This is not that you need that to be a Christian, but this is not a guy who is showing by his life that his heart is Jesus's. In his mind, he agrees that Jesus is a good thing. In his mind, he's like, the Bible's incredible. In his mind, he's actually quite a fierce defender of the Christian faith. But that's where it ends for him. But God says, love me with all of your, say it, with all of your, and with all of your mind. Heart, let me be the seat of your affections and your priorities. Let me be number one because I am number one. I am number one. Give your heart to me. That's your life to me. It's okay to feel love for God. Be enthusiastic. Worship me. And give me your mind. Let your mind be fixed upon me and agree with me and come into alignment with everything that I say and be obedient to the things that I've said to you. Love me with your heart, soul, and mind. Last story, and then I'm going to bring this into a close. I was in a youth camp a number of years ago, and I was preaching, and I gave a response, and some teenagers came forward, and two of them were emotionally affected by what God was doing in their lives in that moment. There were tears. They couldn't believe that God could love them that much, such that it stirred up an emotional response, and there were tears. There were two other young people in the room that were watching it going, oh, like this. The next day, those two young people left the camp. And I asked the camp leader, what happened there? And he said this. They rang their parents that night and said, their kid's crying here about Jesus. And the parents came down and took them away back to their church. And I said, well, what's that about? He said, their church teach and their church believe that if there are feelings involved in their walk with God, that is a negative thing. That's a bit weird, isn't it? And yet, that is quite common, actually. There are streams of the church for whom they prize the mind so highly, and doctrine and theology and what we think so highly, that feelings are seen to be weak and poor. I would say, I'd be happy if you cry every week. It's not great, but what I'm saying is, what I mean is this, don't be afraid in this church to let your emotion towards Jesus Christ flow. If you have such a revelation of God and his love and what he's done for you, that it wells up within you, that you want to weep and cry and sing and shout and dance and run around the room and say, you are incredible, I'm okay with that. In fact, I prefer that to a dull church where no one expresses any emotion whatsoever. If you cannot, that would be poor. I want you to go after theology and doctrine. I want you to, because that's loving God with your mind. I want you to learn. I want you to grow. I want you to love your Bible and read it, because that's loving God with your mind. I want you to work at your left hand and love God. And one day it will come so naturally to you, you won't have to think about any of these things. There'll be a day in heaven where we are restored and whole, and it will not need a command to say love God, because we'll see him, and it'll be like natural. But for today, If you find it hard sometimes, that's why. That's why. The natural result of loving God, sorry, you can take a seat, thank you guys. The natural result of loving God is to then love our neighbor. The more filled with the love of God you are, the more you'll love your neighbor. This great command is the launch pad of your calling in life, your purpose in life. Like I said at the beginning, if you've got that, and then God says, I need you to do a job for me over here, it won't be a problem for you. But if you don't have that, and God says, I need you to do a job for me, you haven't got your why, your motivation, your passion. It'll never quite happen. So that's why this is foundational. It's why this is a launch pad to your call. Love God. Love God. C.S. Lewis said this. Every Christian would agree that a person's spiritual health is exactly proportional to his or her love for God. I'm going to say that again because it's like a wow. C.S. Lewis says, every Christian would agree that a person's spiritual health is exactly proportional to his or her love for God. How do you grow your love for God? How do you grow your love for God? I would say this, increase your time in his presence. I mean, that's why we do church. When we gather, that time of worship this morning was a time of encountering the presence of God. And as we encounter the presence of God and we get to see him and feel him and know him and experience him, our love for him grows. So increase that. Increase your time in the presence of God. Secondly, increase your revelation of his word. Don't settle for ignorance. Get into the Bible, because as you get into the Bible, you get to know who he is and you fall more and more in love with God as you gain revelation in his word. Thirdly, increase your gratitude for who he is. Increase your gratitude as you are thankful, as you are grateful, and as you recount the things that God has said and done, as you recount the attributes of his nature and become grateful, then it increases your love for him. Do not let the world steal your praise, your song, because that's where your love for God is. It's in that. Does that make sense? It's in there. Okay. Last thing. Let's close our eyes. We're going to take a moment to just receive and pray. We sang at the beginning the name of Jesus several times. The most important name in the universe. Why? Because he's our creator. We wouldn't be alive if it were not for him. And then we decided as human beings to reject him. And as a consequence of our choosing to reject Jesus Christ, into the world came brokenness, into the world came sin, into the world came suffering and pain and evil. Into the world those things came because we rejected Jesus. But Jesus loved us so much that he came into our broken world and he demonstrated to us a life lived in the presence of God. He demonstrated to us the kindness of God, the mercy of God, the grace of God, the justice of God, and the kindness of God. And then we rejected him again, and we hung him on a cross, and we crucified him, and we killed the Son of God. But 3 days later, 3 days later, he rose from the dead, defeating death. And in that sacrifice, paying the penalty for our sins and our rejection of him. And today, Jesus is alive. He is the greatest name in the universe, the name above all names. And he would say to you today, I've done all of this. Will you love me? Will you respond to me? Will you come to me? Do you want to know me? Because I love you. I love you when you're at your worst. I love you when you're your farthest away from me. I love you when you're your most selfish. And I'm here to tell you that there's a hope and a way There's a new beginning if you'll just follow me. And if you'll put number one where number one needs to be. And if you'll love me with your heart, your soul, and your mind. If there's anyone in the room this morning and that's speaking to you and you're saying, Jesus, I want to know you, will you just, while all eyes are closed and heads are bowed, will you just let me know by just raising your hand so I can see you, and I'm going to pray for you.